Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the legendary Broadway composer and lyricist Stephen Schwartz, creator of the shows Wicked, Godspell, and Pippin, and composer of the music for the new show, The Prince of Egypt. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Imbal Shtivi. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2Jewish.
Shalom. This has been an unusual Pesach, to say the least. Instead of large family seders for Passover or huge congregational ones, we've been limited to those family members who live in our homes, plus perhaps a few very close relatives or friends with whom we've had a great deal of contact. I've been telling people that just last year, our inaugural Seder at my own synagogue, Congregation Beit Simcha, drew 107 people on the first night of Passover. It was likely the largest congregational Seder in southern Arizona. This year, the 8 people gathered around my dining room table made our Seder again among the largest here in Tucson. What a difference a year and a pandemic makes. Today's the fourth day of Pesach, roughly halfway through the springtime holiday of Matzah, so of course I'm going to do my traditional kvetching about how little I enjoy the bread of affliction. Of course, we're not supposed to enjoy this unleavened, tasteless, cardboard version of the food our ancestors ate when they fled Egyptian slavery so long ago, and I personally fulfill this mitzvah quite completely, eating the classic foodstuff of intestinal disturbance purely out of duty and responsibility. But boy, I just wish our Israelite ancestors had brought along a French baker or two when they headed out into the Sinai Desert and freedom. Which brings us to the central theme of this great festival, human freedom, liberation from bondage and oppression, the true purpose of Pesach, and the inspiration for so many attempts throughout history to free people from the brutal control of tyrants. In fact, two of the founding fathers of America, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, thought that the Exodus should be on the seal of the new nation of America, celebrating our liberation from British bondage. They saw themselves, American revolutionaries, as updated versions of Moses, leading their people to freedom. This year, living in quarantine and home sheltering and on lockdown, we are tasting just a little bit of the oppression our ancestors experienced in slavery, the lack of freedom of movement and assembly, the absence of close human varied contact in a regular way. It's certainly not slavery, and our isolation is not being imposed by Pharaoh, but it's surely a necessary abridgment of freedom. In Egyptian slavery, we prayed, in essence, for deliverance. Every Pesach, at the end of the Seder, we sing L'Shana Haba'a B'Yerushalayim. Next year, may we celebrate our freedom in Jerusalem. This year, we pray, next year, may we be free of plague and pandemic to celebrate our freedom together in Jerusalem, or even right here, where we live, with family and friends together. And so to play us in this morning, here's a totally appropriate song, Deliver Us, from the new musical, The Prince of Egypt, the very Passover-themed show, composed by our guest today, the incredible composer and lyricist, Stephen Schwartz.
And raise up strong.
That was the song Deliver Us from the new musical The Prince of Egypt by our fabulous guest this morning, Stephen Schwartz. When we return in a moment on Too Jewish this morning, we'll meet him. The legendary Broadway composer and lyricist, Stephen Schwartz is the creator of the Broadway smash hits Wicked, Pippin, Godspell, The Magic Show, as well as the Oscar-winning lyricist and composer of Disney films. He'll join us to talk about his new show, The Prince of Egypt, and his incredible career. All when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in Catalina Foothills and Northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring, established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone during normal times. In these days of coronavirus tsoros, join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. or on Zoom, and Saturday morning Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m. also on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A Tucson. And we will be holding all of our services with full music by virtual experience weekly for, well, as long as we must. All of our adult education classes are held on Zoom, which you can access by emailing us at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Our synagogue's on Ina Road, just west of La Cholla on the north side, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property, not in the mall, but in our own building on the south side. But for now, we are a fully functioning virtual congregation on Facebook and Zoom. Email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org to get more information, or go to our website, www.beitsimchatucson.org. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, all being taught now through Zoom and Facebook. And of course, to see all of our services on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing congregation and the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. To play in our distinguished guest, Stephen Schwartz, here's a little of his own early composition, Corner of the Sky.
Everything has its season, everything has its time. Show me soon show you a rhyme. Cats fit on the windowsill, children fit in the snow. Why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go? Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly. I've got to be where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our very special guest. Stephen Schwartz is a legend of musical theater. He's won Oscars and Grammys and should have won more Tonys than the honorary one he received, I'm just saying. He is the composer of musicals such as Godspell, Pippin, Wicked, and the great lyricist, of course. And the new album just out for the musical that should be out but will come out as soon as they lift the restrictions of his original movie, Prince of Egypt, which is now a musical theater production. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Hi, so nice to be with you. Thank you for giving me a chance to talk to you.
So, you know, when you write a musical score for a film, they use, like, often little snippets of songs. What was it like transforming that into a full-on Broadway musical?
Well, in the original animated feature of Prince of Egypt, there were pretty full songs.
You know, Miracle certainly was, and it was a fantastic song.
Thank you so much. But there are only, you don't do that many songs. I mean, the Prince of Egypt, the animated feature, has six songs. And, of course, the stage version, which, as you pointed out, was in the West End until there was no more West End, at least for now, West End of London, has 10 additional songs plus, you know, big finales of each act and dance sequences, etc. So it's a full stage musical, and therefore required a lot, you know, a lot more music than the animated feature had.
Was it fun going back to that?
So much fun, yes. It was. It's such a rich world musically and harmonically, and to go back again and sort of listen to the research I'd done originally, listening to Hebraic songs and Egyptian pop and Israeli pop, and also I had a recording of ancient Egyptian court music, though how on earth they know,
I have no
idea. I think they probably just made it up.
I think so, because musical notation wasn't exactly spectacular back then.
Exactly, and how they even know what the instruments were, I have no idea. But anyway, I listened to all that research. But this time out for the show, I immersed myself much more, along with my orchestrator, August Eriksmoen, in instruments from that area.
Sure.
So particularly the stringed instruments.
Yeah, I
and
heard
wind
some
instruments.
Oud. I heard some other stuff on the recording.
It's
wonderful stuff.
Yeah, percussion instruments. Right. It was really fun to learn about those instruments and try to write specifically for them, and then figure out how they could become an integral part of the score. So that was a new kind of wrinkle to the songwriting, and one I enjoyed very much.
We will talk a great deal more with Stephen Schwartz when we come back here on Two Jewish in just a moment. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Chag Sameach.
And to you.
So, doing Pesach this year has been extraordinarily different. I just have an article on the Star today about why this night was really different. Actually, last week, I guess, that article ran.
Montenegro, we talked about the Jewish community there because you were at a conference there recently, and the Chabad rabbi somehow had the hotel all lined up to do a big community seder for whoever he could get. Undoubtedly, that changed. Tell us what he came up with next.
Right. So this is an amazing guy from your hometown, L.A.
L.A., man. The place where all great Jews come from.
Rabbi Ari Edelkopf.
Jerusalem on the Pacific.
Who had negotiated with the CEO of a very nice, like, five-star luxury hotel that's right on the water to bring two super mashgiachs in from Israel and kosher the whole kitchen and just take over the hotel and invite all the Jews of Montenegro, not only for the seders, but for the whole week, so that they would eat kosher.
For the whole of Pesach.
Okay, so the hotel is closed, and Montenegro has sealed its borders, so the Israelis couldn't have gotten in anyway. But Ari is a very resourceful person and very dedicated to his work. So he organized, this is amazing. You have to understand Montenegro is geographically a small country. It's way smaller than the state of Arizona. Probably bigger than Pima County, but maybe not by much.
Not by much, yeah.
It has very steep mountains that go all the way down to the sea. So one of the reasons it's so beautiful scenically is, like, right along the beach rise these very steep mountains. There's no foothills, there's no gentle slopes, whatever. The capital, which used to be Titograd, is now Podgorica, and it's up in the mountains. It's in the, like, center of the country. Very hard to get to, hairpin curves, whatever. That's where the Jewish Community Center is, and that's where Ari works. And Ari decided that a small thing like the closure of a hotel was not going to end Pesach in Montenegro. On the other hand, there's no kosher food there. There's no matzah. There's no kosher wine. There's no resources for anyone to order online or do what they want. So Ari took it upon himself to organize, with the help of the Jewish Community Center and its staff, Pesach at your doorstep. And basically, he's producing boxes of Seder kit, Seder food, matzah, wine, whatever, kosher meat, and conducting classes online for people who've never run their own Seder.
Right, like the virtual Seders we all did last week, you know, just on Zoom you can experience Pesach, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's if you know what Zoom is.
Yeah, that is true.
But the thing that I find amazing about this is it's not a fundraiser. It's free. Any Jew in Montenegro can either come to Podgorica, if that's convenient for them, or if they live a 2 or 3 hour drive away, this will be delivered to their door for free.
So where's he getting the kosher food and the matzah?
Well, presumably he's bringing it in from Israel.
Right.
Because I think freight flights still arrive, but people flights don't. As I understand it,
I guess you can spray down the boxes or whatever, so you make sure that they're not, there's no virus on the boxes or whatever it is that you do.
Right. I think his concern is more that the contents be kosher than that the exterior of the boxes be sterile.
Virus-free. Right. Yes, I understand.
Right. But it's an amazing, heroic effort, and the Jews of Montenegro are very well served by this guy.
It's great. Listen, Tom, Chag Sameach v'kasher, a guten Zisen Pesach for the rest of it, and we'll talk to you next week.
I look forward to it.
Here's a song from the new release by our guest this morning, Stephen Schwartz, his musical, The Prince of Egypt, and the beautiful When You Believe, just released as a Broadway cast album.
Many nights we've prayed with no proof anyone could hear. In our hearts a hopeful song we barely understood. Now we are not afraid, although we know there's much to fear. We were moving mountains long before we knew we could. There can be miracles when you believe, though hope it's hard to care. Who knows what miracles you can achieve when you believe somehow you will. When prayer so often proved in vain, hope seemed like the summer birds too softly flown away. And now I'm standing
That was When You Believe from the new Broadway cast album of The Prince of Egypt by our guest, Stephen Schwartz. The show may not have opened yet, but we've got the album in advance, and so can you. It's time now for our 2020 presidential election from a Jewish perspective segment. So, now it's official. Bernie Sanders, first Jewish candidate to ever win a presidential primary, has dropped out of the race to become the Democratic candidate for president. Sanders suspended his 2020 run last week, saying his path toward victory is virtually impossible, but pledging to stay in on primary ballots through the Democratic National Convention in order to gain influence for himself and his ideas within the party. Former Vice President Joe Biden is now clearly the presumptive Democratic nominee. Bernie Sanders put together a progressive campaign for the nomination in 2016, in which he was victorious in 23 primaries, while losing overall to Hillary Clinton, who won 34 primaries, and Sanders then stayed in the race until the bitter end. This time around, Bernie won the early states and took the biggest prize, California, but couldn't sustain his momentum. Sanders' departure from the race is a striking turnaround for a candidate who less than 2 months ago was the clear frontrunner after finishing in a virtual tie for first in Iowa and winning in New Hampshire and Nevada. But in a race that's been reshaped and eclipsed by the coronavirus crisis, Sanders faced no realistic path to the nomination after a series of lopsided losses to Joe Biden, beginning in South Carolina in late February, culminating with victories by Biden in crucial states like Michigan and Florida last month. In spite of a dynamic insurgent campaign that saw the term socialist return to political prominence in America for the first time in decades, Sanders never appealed to African-American voters, a core Democratic constituency. Bernie Sanders, who is 78 years old, leaves the campaign having almost single-handedly moved the Democratic Party further to the left and having attracted the passionate support of younger voters all around the country. He also transformed the way Democratic campaigns raise money, eschewing big fundraisers and instead relying on an army of small-dollar donors. So, an old Jewish guy who may have spent his political career in Vermont and Washington, D.C., but never lost his Brooklyn accent or highly articulate flair for public rhetoric, has dropped out of what must surely be his final campaign for president. We'll have to wait longer for our first Jewish president, it seems, but Bernie reshaped politics with his surprisingly successful campaigns. That was our 2020 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our Mivi Na, our expert on Israel, Inbal Shtivi, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Inbal, Chag Sameach.
Boker Tov, Chag Sameach.
So I was mentioning off mic that last year at our congregation, Beit Simcha Community Seder, we thought we'd have 40 people. We had 107 people. It's one of the largest in Tucson. This year in my home, I had 8 people for Seder, including, you know, 4 of us who live here. And it was also the largest in Tucson, probably. So,
Very strange times.
Tell us a little bit about how coronavirus is affecting Israel, what you've been hearing.
Israel is celebrating Pesach, just like everyone here. And yeah, it's sad. People are... Actually, there is a formal lockdown in Israel still until at least Sunday, because the tendency is to gather, you know, family-based groups of 30, 40 people. That's a normal group in Seder Pesach, 25 maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
These kind of quantities of people around the
same normal
table.
25, 30, 40, yeah. And if you have a big family, it might be 60 or 70. You know,
yeah, could be, but that's normal. We all feel bad for not being with our parents. You know, leaving someone alone in Seder Pesach, it's almost a sin, right?
Oh, it's not almost. It is a sin.
It is a sin, but it's like it's so bad. It is bad.
It's terrible. But so, you know,
pikuach nefesh. I mean, we're protecting lives, right?
It is pikuach nefesh. So everybody, at least everybody I know, had a Zoom setter, or at least a moment where they gathered to say Chag Sameach and sing some few songs, and then people, you know, went on their own meal and reading of the Haggadah. Some people did the whole thing together. So Zoom was very popular on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But yes, Pesach is for the religious. It's the holiday where you go each day and meet everybody. For the secular, it's the holiday where you have a full week, so you go on trips, you go, hiking.
You go to Eilat. You go to the Galil. You go somewhere.
You go abroad.
Yeah.
So people are very much in their homes. Unable to go out by law. They're not able to go out. So people get fined if they're out and about. So that is a bit of a different moment. In Israel, the streets are empty. I keep seeing those videos from Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and other places. People are taking from their rooftops or with drones. And everything is empty.
Very strange, you know. It's
very, very strange.
Having been in Israel at Pesach and gone to the Kotel, you know, it's usually huge crowds and the Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, and even non-religious people are going just because it's such an event, such a thing.
And, so the Kotel is empty. No one is allowed.
Nobody, yeah.
Nobody. And this Pesach has a... in the ultra-Orthodox, of course, communities, it's even, because the corona hit a little bit harder there, not a little bit, let's say 10 times more the quantity, not the average. So over there, it's real. The lockdown is really felt. We're talking about families of 8 and 10 children in smaller apartments.
Just absolutely.
Well, God willing, next year we can really say Kol Dichvin Yitev Yechol. Next year, may all of our hungry come and eat. Thanks so much, Inbal. Chag Sameach. I hope it's still a good Pesach. We will talk next week.
It is. Bye-bye. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Izzy is sitting in shul one Shabbos morning when he falls asleep and starts to snore. The shamus, the synagogue caretaker, quickly rushes over to him, taps him on the shoulder and says, "Stop snoring, Izzy. You're disturbing the others in shul." "Now look here," says Izzy. "I always pay my membership fully. I have a right to do whatever I want." "I agree," replies the shamus, "but your snoring is keeping everybody else awake." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion, Shmini, third in the book of Leviticus, includes a dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are beginning their service there as Kohanim. God's presence fills the tabernacle. All is right with the people and apparently the world. And then, suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests named Nadav and Avihu, offer Esh Zarah, strange fire, to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by divine flame, dying before God. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with peculiar words. God says, "By those brought near to me, I am consecrated and honored before the people." There is no mention of whether Aaron accepted this as a just ending for his sons. The Torah text merely says, "Vayidom Aharon." Aaron was silent. We do not know the young priest's offense, if there was any. We are not told what that strange fire was. God decrees atonement offerings are made for whatever sin the young men may have committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. There's no further explanation in the Torah, although the rabbis later create a variety of possible explanations for the disaster. Maybe the young men were drunk, or they offered sacrifices not ordered by God, or they were actually engaged in some form of idolatry, or they were too arrogant and usurped their father's place. The truth is, we don't know why they died. Of course, that's not just true in Torah. We also do not know why most tragedies take place in our own lives, or why terrible things sometimes happen to good people. As Ben Sirach says in the book Ecclesiasticus from the Apocrypha of the Bible, we have been shown more than we can understand. God keeps the rationale private. We just don't know, and we likely won't know. So what do we know? We do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss, like plague and infection. Our own comfort and consolation come only when we silently acknowledge that we are powerless. This seems small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to really comprehend profound loss. May God protect each of us from such tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage, and sometimes with silence. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, the marvelous composer and lyricist Stephen Schwartz, explains what it was like turning his score for an animated film into a full Broadway musical, The Prince of Egypt, and also tells us where musicals like Wicked came from when we come back on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In an extraordinary ruling, senior Orthodox rabbis gave permission for people to use the Zoom video conferencing service during Pesach Seder, allowing families separated by the coronavirus pandemic to connect with one another this year. Rabbi Eliyahu Abergel, a highly respected halachic authority, an authority on Jewish law who served as head of the Jerusalem Rabbinical Court for 10 years, together with several other municipal chief rabbis in Israel, wrote a responsa to request to use Zoom at the Passover Seder. He said that it would be possible under certain restrictions due to the time of emergency currently being experienced. The rabbis wrote that families that had wished to connect with each other at the Seder could use Zoom if they turned on their electronic devices and the Zoom application before Pesach began. Orthodox rabbis forbade the use of electricity on Shabbat when it began to become commonplace at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century. That prohibition has become standard throughout the Orthodox world. These rabbis' permission to allow the use of Zoom for Seder, even with the stipulation that it had to already have been on before Passover began, is a significant ruling, given that Orthodox Judaism has been very strict about prohibiting the use of electricity and electronic devices on Shabbat and holidays. The rabbis started their ruling saying they were asked by a Torah scholar whether the Zoom program could be used at Pesach Seder. The explanation was they wished to connect elderly and family members who were unable to join for the holiday ceremony because of social distancing regulations. The rabbis, all Sephardic, noted that many Sephardic and North African rabbis had permitted the use of electricity on Jewish holidays, including the first Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Ben Sion Meir Chai Uziel. They went on to say that they were asked merely whether one could turn on the electronic device before Pesach began and leave Zoom running during the Seder so that family members could connect. Under certain circumstances, they approved of that. That ruling allowed many Orthodox families to join together on Zoom to experience at least something akin to the traditional group Seder they would have had normally. In other news, sadder news, both of Britain's leading national circulation Jewish newspapers, the Jewish Chronicle and the Jewish News, are being liquidated. The staff of both papers are laid off because their parent company, the Kessler Foundation Charity, has run out of money due to economic effects of the coronavirus pandemic. The Jewish Chronicle was established in 1841. It's Britain's oldest running Jewish newspaper. It had 50 employees. The Jewish News had 6 journalists on its staff. With great sadness, the board of the Jewish Chronicle has taken the decision to seek a creditor's voluntary liquidation of Jewish Chronicle Newspapers Limited, the newspaper announced. The Kessler Foundation is actively working to secure a future for the Jewish Chronicle after the liquidation. We will see. Despite heroic efforts of the editorial and production team of the newspaper, it has become clear the Jewish Chronicle will not be able to survive the impact of the current coronavirus epidemic in its current form, they stated. In February, the Jewish Chronicle and Jewish News agreed to merge in order to secure a financial future of Jewish media in the United Kingdom. Well, didn't work. That announcement of the closure came on the eve of Passover. Jewish media had been struggling for years in the UK, but the coronavirus crisis caused a collapse in print sales and advertising revenue. Similarly, the Canadian Jewish News has been forced to close its doors and end its run because of the devastating financial impact of COVID-19. Advertising dried up because of the pandemic, and a shaky financial base could not be maintained. There's another significant loss to the Jewish world to see these publications collapse. In news on this side of the Atlantic, President Donald Trump has fired the Jewish Inspector General, who was chosen to oversee the $2 trillion stimulus package aimed at offsetting the extensive damage to the economy caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Glenn Fine was selected by a panel of inspectors general to head the congressionally mandated oversight body created as part of the stimulus law passed last month. Then, last week, Trump effectively removed Fine from his post by replacing him in his current role, acting Inspector General of the Defense Department. The oversight panel overseeing the stimulus must, by law, be led by an inspector general. Fine will revert to an earlier status, Deputy Inspector General of the Pentagon. Fine served the Justice Department from 2000 to 2011 and the Pentagon since 2016. He has served under both Democratic and Republican presidents. Inspectors general are independent. They're usually career officials. Trump has said he sees some of those people who have angered him as part of a political conspiracy against his presidency. Last week, he fired Michael Atkinson, the intelligence community inspector general. Atkinson advanced a whistleblower complaint from within the intelligence community revealing that Trump had sought to pressure Ukraine to open an investigation into a political rival, Joe Biden, of course. That complaint led to Trump's impeachment in the U.S. House of Representatives, but he was acquitted by the Republican Senate. Multiple inspectors general and Atkinson himself have said the firing threatens the integrity of the inspector general process, as does the firing of Glenn Fine as ethics overseer of this huge stimulus package. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We are thrilled to welcome back to Two Jewish our very special guest, Stephen Schwartz, the legendary Broadway composer and film composer, who has a new musical out, and it will be the album is out now, and you can get it. The show will be out as soon as they reopen the theaters, which sounds like something from Elizabethan times, but it's right now. He is the composer of Godspell, composer and lyricist of Godspell, Pippin, Wicked, The Magic Show, so many great shows, as well as having won Oscars for compositions for movies. What do you like composing for best? What do you like writing lyrics for best?
Well, I just enjoy telling stories, whether it is for the stage or for film. There's something about live theater and just being there with the cast and in the theater night after night as you're working on it, and the kind of heat of the collaboration of everybody being there in the same place, and you can't really match that excitement with film, which is, you know, everybody does his job a little bit more separately. But with Prince of Egypt, you know, we were all in there together, whether it was for the show or then for the recording, which I'm so glad we were able to do unusually before the show opened so that we can have it out there as a celebration of Passover, since Prince of Egypt is the Passover story. You know, even though the show is currently, as are all West End shows, currently on hiatus.
On hiatus. So I love the original score of Prince of Egypt. I've sung that song, Miracle, for Pesach, or sometimes for Shabbat Shirah, in which we're doing the story of the crossing of the sea when it comes up in the Torah reading. And you used sections of the Shirat HaYam. You used some Hebrew there, you know, Ashirah
Ladonai. Exactly right, yeah.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Tell us about how that evolved.
Well, there was a section in the song when I was originally writing it for the film that I thought would be good if I could find an appropriate Hebrew for what would the the newly freed
slaves, the Israelite slaves.
They weren't Israelites, yeah.
Although I have people who call them Israelis all the time, but they're not.
Yeah, I was going to call them Israelites, but they weren't Israelites yet. Yeah. But they were the newly freed Hebrew slaves.
Right.
In the course of my research, there was a rabbi in Los Angeles who told me about what is called the Song at the Sea,
right,
and sent me the Hebrew words, and you know, I went and an English translation, because I'm not anywhere near fluent in Hebrew, and I sort of went through it and picked out the lines that I felt were most celebratory and expressed kind of gratitude and joy, and made them into this middle section for the song.
Okay, so I have to ask if you remember which rabbi in Los Angeles it was, since I'm from Los Angeles and a rabbi I made.
I knew you would ask me that. I have to tell you the truth. It was 20 years ago.
It's okay. We rabbis.
And I don't remember.
We rabbis are all the same anyway. Never mind. I understand. In creating this musical, what was the most surprising part about transforming it for the stage for you?
Well, I think the way the production evolved was surprising to me. As you probably know, my son Scott Schwartz directed the production.
That's right.
And it was his vision to make it very physical theater, to use a lot of dance, so that dancers actually become the River Nile and the burning bush, and sort of they become the desert when Moses is wandering through the desert. And I didn't expect that use of choreography at all, but I find it really imaginative and so exciting and beautiful in the show.
You are the only composer, lyricist, I think, ever to have three shows run more than 1,900 performances on Broadway. It's an amazing accomplishment. How does that make you feel?
Well, obviously, it's always extremely gratifying to know that work that I've done, you know, for any writer, that work that you've done has found an audience, enough of an audience that people come to see it over many years and a long period of time. The point of being a writer is to try to communicate with people. And so when a work does seem to be communicating with a lot of people, then that's obviously the greatest gift that one can receive as a writer.
So as a kind of a theater nerd, I have to ask you, I think you started Pippin in college, right?
That is correct.
And then you produced it successfully there and then kind of put it away, and it came back later. Can you tell that story?
Well, yes, I did a version of Pippin with a friend of mine when I was in college at Carnegie Mellon for a club that put on original musicals. And then when I graduated and came to New York, there were some people who had heard the little vanity album we made at school that were interested in developing it as an actual show. And so that's how that came to be, and ultimately, you know, I came to Roger Herson as the book writer, Bob Fosse as the director choreographer, and it had a successful run, and then, you know, has been done for many years in schools and colleges and community theaters, etc. And then just a few years back, the great director Diane Paulus had a brilliant idea of a new way to do the show, and so we had the wonderful revival in 2013.
Yeah, I happened to see the revival. The rumors are that Bob Fosse made some significant changes in the way the show was working. How was that working with Fosse? A theater legend, of course, but obviously not an easy guy.
No, he was not an easy guy, as anyone who saw Fosseverse would know. He was difficult for writers. He was not an enormously articulate man. And he couldn't really express. He didn't really speak the language of writers, so that made it especially difficult. And he was pretty autocratic. But I do, and so there was a lot of tension between us working on the original show, but I have come to feel in retrospect that that very tension and the fact that neither of us entirely got his way contributes to why the show works. And interestingly enough, over the years, as I've gotten older, my point of view has evolved, and I now see the show in a lot of ways through Bob's eyes, where when I was 23 years old and working on the show originally, you know, I was seeing it in a much different way.
I can certainly understand that. Just a last word about this this musical release. It's really like asking you, you know, who's your favorite child, but what's your favorite song on the new album?
Well, I'm not going to answer that because I don't want the audience to be listening. Let everyone decide what his or her favorite song is. What I will say is that I'm thrilled with the way the album came out. We have a cast that just is one great singer after another, and I feel it's so brilliantly orchestrated by August Eriksmoen. I just am very, very happy with the way the story is told through the album, particularly now because there's no show that people can see. But I will leave it to each individual to decide what his or her favorite is.
I want to thank Stephen Schwartz for a fantastic visit here on Too Jewish. The album is the album just released of Prince of Egypt. You can find it, of course, every place you find music nowadays. And people can go to your website, right, stephenschwartz.com, to find out more about you.
Absolutely, yes. I invite them to do so.
Stephen, Chag Sameach, happy Passover. Couldn't be a better time.
Thank you. Same to you. Yes, coming up. That's why, you know, it's nice to have an album about the Passover story in time for Passover.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, you don't have to eat matzah to enjoy this album, but it probably helps.
I encourage people to listen while they're having matzah.
Absolutely. Stephen, thanks a million.
Thank you, too. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out from Prince of Egypt here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Eileen Pollack, author of The Professor of Immortality. Our playout this morning comes from our guest, Stephen Schwartz, and the Broadway cast album of his new musical, The Prince of Egypt. It's the new song, Footprints on the Sand. My friends, may you have a healthy week, God willing, a Chag Pesach Sameach V'Kasher, a good, happy holiday of Passover, a Shavua Tov, and a week, we pray, of peace.
It's not that I want glory or the world to know my name, but maybe just to leave things a little changed from when I came. But it's not my lot, use what you've got, and all I am is footprints on the sand, ripples on the river, echoes of a sound from a distant fading chime.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.